Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Dana from the Working With Others group.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Dana Benbow. I'm an alcoholic. Amen. By the grace of a loving God, strong sponsorship, a willingness to grow along spiritual lines has outlined this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. With your sponsorship and strong home group, I haven't found it necessary to take a drink since April 30th, 1995, and I'm truly grateful to take absolutely no credit. I don't know that I've ever been at a more beautiful place for an AA meeting in my brief period of recovery. And I'm grateful that Jeff has asked me to come and speak with you tonight. We've had the pleasure of having Jeff come and speak at my home group, the Working Mothers Group. We're in Neckong, New Jersey. It's a little town in northwest New Jersey. We have a meeting on Thursday night, an open speakers meeting that's not too different from your format. We select speakers to come in and speak. We have a closed discussion meeting on Sunday night at 6:30. Where we share about how we have or have not practiced the principles during the past week. That meeting is incredibly powerful and very instrumental, at least it has been for me. And I've been a member of this group. Well, actually, we split off from another group, but I've been a member of this group since I've been in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm pretty grateful for that. So it's really an honor to be here. It's always an honor to be at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, it's always an honor to be in and amongst our fellows. I've heard it often said that we're more alike than we are different, and I feel that way every time I come to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. My spirit just gets lifted. There's a little chatter that goes on. There's an AA chatter, and just before a meeting, it's kind of like it just kind of lifts you right up. It's pretty cool. It's a large part of what keeps me coming back on a regular basis. So we got clear instructions here in the book about what we're to do when we're telling our story in an open environment. We talk about what we were like, what happened, and what we're like now. And I'm going to try to do that to the best of my ability. And hopefully, in the midst of all this, I'll share a little bit with you about some of the things that I've learned in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had the good pleasure of having one of the guys that I sponsored joining me tonight. He was my navigator. We took some back roads to get here, so we saw some absolutely beautiful countryside. I'm from Maine, so that's kind of where the story starts. I'm from rural Maine. My dad was a college professor, and I grew up out in the country, not this similar to this. We had rectangular bales when I grew up. We don't have the round bales that you see here. But I grew up in farm country. And kind of that's where the story has to start. I don't have any, I can't point to any part of my family that justifies why I'm standing here in front of you tonight. I had a good childhood. There's some things that we'll talk about along the way, but I had a good childhood and never wanted for anything. My parents loved me to the best of their ability. And I have two sisters and a brother. It was a good home. There wasn't anything about that home. But I can tell you this, I've heard it so often from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. Even when I was a little kid, I never felt comfortable ever. Never felt comfortable. I was uncomfortable. We were talking about this in the car on the way down. I was uncomfortable around other people. I have no idea where that comes from. I have no explanation for that. But I just never felt comfortable. I didn't think I was going to say the right thing. I didn't think I was going to do the right thing. I didn't think I would wear the right clothes. There's a whole lot up until the time that I actually started to drink where that pops out periodically. I always laugh. At one point in time in my youth, I thought maybe I'd been adopted. But I didn't fit in the family. I just didn't fit. And I didn't understand any of that until I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and started to do some work. I had a sponsor, and you're going to hear a lot about that. My current sponsor and my previous sponsor, that's a large part of my recoveries. He helped me see things that I couldn't see about me. So I grew up in Maine, and I did, I did a lot of things that anyone else would do in youth. I got in trouble and did all the stuff that young kids do. The town that I grew up in didn't have a particularly strong high school, and so my parents thought it might be a good idea if I went away to boarding school. And they'd both gone to boarding school, the same school that I went to. And so I as a freshman in high school, I'll give you a sense of my age, 1964, pack up, and off we go. I'm in Western Massachusetts in an all-boys school with an all-girls school across the river, living in a dorm with a bunch of other freshmen. And you know, I was just, I happened to have a conversation about one of my granddaughters with my daughter-in-law on Sunday afternoon, and we were talking about this in the car on the way down to it. It's very rural. The 7 years of my life that I would not want to live over again are the ages 13 to 19. And to me, they're an absolute metaphor for alcoholism, because I'm absolutely convinced that you all have it all figured out. And I'm scared, and I don't have it figured out, and it's frightening. And I got emotions going all over God's green acre, and it's the 7 years of my life that I wouldn't want to go back and relive. And I don't know if that's your experience, but the thing that's telling about that is that I'm judging what's going on. I'm seeing you with your external and assuming that your internal is different than me because your external is different than me. And I'm judging you know where you are based upon how you look, not based upon how you're doing. I've been a bright. A relatively bright and talented student in a small town of Fairfield Center, Maine. But you put me in a school with about a very bright kids. All of a sudden I start to have difficulties. I'm not getting A's anymore. I'm not getting B's anymore. A C is something to celebrate, and I'm more likely getting D's. And I got no idea what's going on. And I was a skinny kid. I don't look that way anymore. I guess that's the ravages of old age. I was, skinny with Coke bottle glasses because they were made out of glass back then as opposed to the plastic we have today that make us look a little better. And we'd get together on the weekends with the girls from the girls' school. And you've got and you want to talk about a bouillabaisse of emotions and experiences that are just it's amazing. Well, it lasted 3 years. I kind of went through my freshman, sophomore, and junior year. So we're in the fall of '68, and somebody came on campus for a football game in 1968, and they had some non-conference approved substance. Now, if you're in a boarding school, right, and you decide you want a drink or do non-conference approved substances, you're going out in the woods, right? So there's a bunch of four of us that are out in the woods. And these guys, I don't have that much in common with them. I really don't. A couple of athletes, a guy that's really smart. And, we proceed to do what we do when we have a non-conference approved substance out in the woods. We get high. And all of a sudden, I'm not so separate. I'm a part of. What I have to say, you have an interest in. And all of a sudden, that separateness starts to disappear. Now, alcohol emerges relatively quickly and later on in that year, and alcohol never disappears. The non-conference food substances disappear, but the alcohol never disappeared. But the key thing is that that I had that experience of being a part of. It says in the book, The Doctor's Opinion, which I think is probably one of the most seminal components of the book, because it tells me what my illness is. It says, I'm restless, irritable, and discontented until I take a drink. Now, I've heard people from the podium say, alcohol stopped working. I don't believe alcohol stopped working one bit. I absolutely imagine that there's probably some watering hole not too far from here that I found it. And I took a couple of drinks. I think it'll work just as well today as it worked back when. But the difference is I'm not restless, irritable, discontented. That's why I drank. That's why I felt separate. I was restless, irritable, discontented all the time. I'm an if-only guy. I'm an if-only guy. If only things were different than they are right now, I'd be okay. And what that means, if you think about that, and this will kind of be a theme that you'll see reemerge, if I'm anywhere other than where my feet are. It's pretty hard to be anywhere other than your feet are, right? It doesn't work very well. But I chased that for a long period of time. So I'm restless, irritable, discontented. I take the alcohol, and I feel better. I feel part of, and there's lots of stories that go on. I went up and I didn't go to college. Almost flunked out of prep school. I managed to get out of there with. I think I got an A or a high grade on the final exam in physics, and so I did just well enough to graduate. I'd already flunked one class. Third year of Latin. Probably nobody here has taken Latin, but I took 3 years of Latin. Don't ask me why. It sounded like a good idea at the time. There's a lot of things in life that are like that. But by the third year, I'm trying to do Cicero, and Cicero and I are not getting along. You know, I just gave up. You know, I just gave up. I just quit. I just quit trying. And so I failed that class. And I got out of school, and I went off and got a summer job with a bunch of other guys that I'd been hanging around with. And by the way, By the spring of my senior year, you didn't want to leave your wallet anywhere. You didn't want to leave your drugs anywhere. You didn't want to leave your records. I absconded with people's records. These are a long time ago. Those of you that are younger won't know what a long play record is, but I had. You know, I'm not proud of any of that, guys. I'm really not proud of any of that. But it's my story. What happened was I felt so ill at ease with who I was. That I was happy to take what you had to make me feel better. I went off and we had this summer job, and you know, we were in a summer camp in Lake George, and for young boys, these guys and I, we were, you know, drinking age was 18 in New York at that time, and so we'd go off and we'd get drunk and do a variety of other things, and they thought it was not such a good idea that people like of our type would be around these young kids that were in summer camp. I can't figure out why. It didn't, it doesn't seem like it's all that inappropriate. We were having a good time, but so be it. I went off and joined the Navy for a while, and there was a lot of 1969 and 1970 that I can honestly tell you I don't remember. You heard that saying before. If you remember the 60s, you weren't there. There's a few baby boomers around, but, you know, there's a lot of periods I don't remember. One of the things that the book talks about is that, you know, we can be amazingly focused. And I got out of the service, got out of the Navy, and I concluded that being an enlisted man in the Navy was not really what I was what I was meant to be. And I decided I wanted to get back to college and wanted to get my degree. And what I can tell you is that there are periods in my life when I was amazingly focused. I was flip. From what happened in high school to college, I did very well in college. I was very focused. Didn't do much party. I was really focused on and driven by one thing. And then I got out, and then I got a job. And as my job, you know, and as I got a job, I got more money. And as I got more money, it was a little bit easier for me to move to a lifestyle that I wanted. So most of my drinking, I'm more of a closet drinker. I'm not a big bar guy. Most of my drinking was done at home. So I needed to be able to put alcohol in the home. And once I got sufficient economic circumstances, I was able to stock the cabinet. And I would go home and have a couple of pops. Now, I spent 10 years in the Midwest, they call soda pop out there. In any event, I'd come home and have a couple of pops, a couple of drinks. And at first, they were just a couple of drinks. I remember my dad doing that when I was growing up. He'd have a little scotch and a couple ice cubes, and he could sip that. Not so for me, folks. That's not how I drank. It didn't take very long between, you know. And if you've ever figured out what a shot is, right? Take a shot glass out, look at a shot. I don't know about you guys. I don't know how you drink, but that's the first slug that I'm taking is a shot, right? I'm not sipping that stuff. It's boom. And I'm drinking tumblers of scotch. And life starts to get complicated. Life starts to get complicated. Now, a lot of this, you know, I don't have a lot of, I don't have a lot of horror stories to tell you about my drinking, thankfully. But I don't have a lot of horror stories to tell you. But what I can tell you is that over time, And I became a daily drinker. At the end of my drinking, I was drinking every day. I would find a reason to drink. I'd get up in the morning and tell you I wasn't going to drink. I wasn't going to, and I meant it. I meant it. I absolutely meant it. I wasn't going to drink. And then by, 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm convincing myself, having a conversation with me, not with you, with me, I'm convincing myself that I can probably have a beer or two and ease into this and it'll be okay. And I swore, and I'm waking up in the morning and I'm popping Tylenol back then, but I'm popping aspirin. And I'm telling my wife that my sinuses are acting up and I got a hangover. I got one almost every day. And I just repeat that, like they say, wash, rinse and repeat. I just round and round and round. What I know about alcoholism is that the things that we find in common often are how we experience this gap, the things we feel. We come from all different walks of life. That's the amazing thing. And it says in the book, we're people who normally would not mix, right? I probably wouldn't drink with you. You probably wouldn't drink with me, right? But all of a sudden, if we start talking about what's on the inside, all of a sudden it changes. My life, there's some things happened in my early teens that shouldn't have happened to a young boy in his home. I kind of buried that stuff and carried that around and didn't really think about that a whole lot. But that was kind of underneath the surface in the background. I was just ill adapted to life. Get to college, get out of college, I get married, have a couple of kids, I'm making money. And in the early days of my professional career, in the mid-70s, everybody drank at lunch, right? A couple of martinis. And if you were entertaining a broker, I was in the insurance industry, you're out entertaining someone, everybody's drinking. I have to tell you this, my story is replete with people who drank worse than I did. And unfortunately, that means that I never had to look at me for a long time. Because there was always somebody that was in worse shape than I was. So it always enabled me to say, I'm not that bad, right? I'm not that bad. And maybe that allowed my wife to say the same thing. I don't know. I'm graced with a wife that is a very active member of Al-Anon. I would wish that for anybody because that's been a huge, huge benefit to my sobriety. We go to meetings on Sunday night. There's an Al-Anon meeting across the hall from our AA meeting. And she's over there, and I'm in the meeting. And she comes to our open meeting on Thursday nights. And so we've done recovery together. That's been a real blessing that not everybody gets, and I've been pretty blessed with that. So I'm progressing in my career. I'm drinking more. I can tell you that I was transferred to Boston at one point in time, and I worked it was the Prudential Tower. And we'd go in there on a Friday night, and the top of the hub was called, there's a bar up there, and they had twofers. You go in there, 4:30, 5 o'clock, start drinking twofer martinis, and then get on the Mass Pike to go home. I can't tell you how many nights I went down the Massachusetts Turnpike when I had no business being anywhere near the road. It was only by God's grace that nothing ever happened to me or anybody around. And it's easy to hide. I mean, you do that, you don't have any consequences, and you don't think about that. You don't think about the fact that you're drinking every day. I got to a point where, in the midst of all this, by the by, there's the relationship with my family of origin, my father and mother, particularly my father. I couldn't be in my father's presence for 15 minutes without getting in an argument with him. I couldn't tell you most of the time what those arguments were about, but for whatever it was, whatever reason it is, I could not get along with my father. And I'd go home, and he never had what I needed in the liquor cabinet, so we'd stop, and I'd bring stuff along the way. Inevitably, we're having an argument, and it's fueled by a little alcohol. That always helps an argument, right? And One day my mother said to me, "Don't you think you drink a lot?" I to this day, I don't know that she even remembers. Well, she's passed, so she doesn't remember now. But I don't know that she even remembered that she said that. But it's one of those moments when something kind of struck me, and it's like, Now, you know, my immediate, you know, we have the denial, right? We talk about that river in Egypt, the denial. That's just, you know, it's just part of work. You know, it's just part of being an executive. We drink a lot. But I came home and it bothered me. And so somewhere along the way, I had this debate in my head, and I decided, well, maybe I should stop drinking. Maybe I should stop drinking. So I stopped. I'm not thinking I'm an alcoholic, mind you. I just think, let's take a little vacation from this. I needed 2 or 3 weeks. I don't remember exactly now how long. That one I don't remember. But for some reason or other, I think at some point in time, after 2 or 3 weeks, I said, I've demonstrated that I think in the back of my head, I've demonstrated I got control. I don't have to drink. Okay. I can drink again. You know, at this point in time, we're at the point where my wife won't let me make her drinks, and I don't want her making mine. She thought Scotch on the Rocks was Scotch, half Scotch, half water. I call it alcohol abuse, but and she thought she liked a gimlet, and I think, well, 99% vodka, right? A little bit of coloring in there, right? Not what she had in mind. And I didn't need her. I didn't need anybody to drink with me. I didn't need you to drink with me. If you're going to be a problem, just go away and leave me alone. Now, if you're an alcoholic of my type, that's going to start to sound like some isolation is taking place. You know, we're circling the wagons. And I didn't even know what I was doing. I suppose a year and a half or so after that, I made a second attempt to stop drinking on my own. And this is the one that I can't forget. Because I can tell you every single day, I quit on a Sunday, right? That's when you quit. Quit on Sunday, right? Got to go to work on Monday. Weekend's over. You know, I didn't think at the time to reflect on that, but it's easy to quit on it. It's easy to quit on a Sunday. That's an easy time to quit. By Monday afternoon, I'm starting to think, well, maybe that was a little harsh. Every single day of that week, and I made it till Friday, every day of that week, and this is the non-normal behavior, I was trying to find a reason that was good enough or bad enough for me to drink. I was looking for some outside reason for me to drink. Normal people don't do that, I'm here to tell you. Normal people, first of all, they don't spend that much time thinking about it, much less they don't spend that much time parsing that to try to find the rationality. And by that time, every day needed to be celebrated or it needed to be commiserated, and one or the other. You know, I either needed to celebrate or I needed to forget. I got home at the end of the day, great intentions. I'd come home, I'd have my briefcase, I'd open it up, I'd pick up the Wall Street Journal, I'd make a nice big drink, I'd sit beside me. By the time I finished that first drink, maybe I got halfway through the paper. The paper's going back in the briefcase. I had all this other stuff I was going to do that. I had best intentions. I don't believe I had best intentions. I had wonderful intentions of what I was going to do. Back in the briefcase, close the briefcase, and have another drink. That'll wait till tomorrow. Kind of reminiscent of in Bill's story. You know, hits the bar and says, you know, to hell with it. It'll be better tomorrow. We'll get them tomorrow. That was the whole life story, right? I get to the end of things, and I just... That's it. I'm done. I gotta feel better. And I have a very good friend who will tell you that the words that I used, the language that I used was, "I need a drink." I would say that, you know, we'd have some problem come up at work. And my first, I meant to go get a drink right then, but that was the only thinking that was going on in my head. I need a drink. I need a drink. I need to alter where I'm at. I need to alter my perception. I'd love to tell you that I'd love to tell you some marvelous things here. This goes out like a whimper, not like a bang at the end. I actually am in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous because I have a son that went into recovery, and he's still in recovery, and he's given me permission to reference this, so I'm not breaking his anonymity. He's got 10 days more sobriety than I do. which is pretty amazing. He'd gone into a rehab. He, facts and circumstances are his story, not mine. But in any event, we went to visit him. He was out in out by Scranton. There's a rehab by Scranton that we went to called Clearbrook. And so we went on a family day. Family day had to be there. I think he had to be there 10 days, and then we could go on a Sunday afternoon to visit him. So my wife and I get in the car. We drive out there. We arrive, and the first thing that happens is we get to meet him, and then we met one of his patients, guy by the name of Dennis. Dennis was from British Columbia. Now, you tell me why somebody from British Columbia is in a rehab and Scranton. I don't know. But what I can tell you about Dennis from British Columbia is that he gave me my first big book. He gave me a big book. He had no reason to think that I had any issues with alcoholism. I know it was his book because he had some writing in it. I still have that book at home. It's falling apart more than this one is. It's falling apart, so I just leave it at home. But I still have it. That was the first big book that I had. So we go to a meeting, as in many rehabs. They have an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. They had an Al-Anon meeting and the open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And this is my first experience with AA. And I didn't at the time know. I can't explain now why I felt comfortable there. But I felt okay. And I still remember there reading, how it works, as many meetings do. They open with how it works. And there's a line in there that says, if you want what you have and you're willing to go to any lengths to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. I still remember that. It's like it's chiseled in rock. I still remember. I don't know why. We had a meeting with a counselor before we came home, and they said it'd be a good idea if you didn't have alcohol in the house. Now, I've already told you that I'm a closet drinker, which means I drink at home, right? And by the way, at this point in time, when I go to the liquor store, I'm buying multiple types of liquor because I'm afraid I'm going to run out. Now, forget the fact that I've got enough money in my pocket that I could buy a case of scotch, right? I'm buying 4 or 5 different kinds of scotch, Canadian whiskey, bourbon, whatever it might be, so that my liquor cabinet won't run out. Another one of those little insights that I have after I got sober. My wife thinks it's a good idea when we go home that, maybe we should pour all the alcohol. Now, I have to tell you, that's like having a major coronary rate. What? Not such a good idea. I had a couple of drinks that night. Couple, I don't know how many I had. I know I was a little inebriated. I know we had some crosswords. There's never been any argument, no physical, no. There might have been a lot of emotional, but there wasn't, nothing of that nature. That's just not the nature of never been the nature of our relationship. And I remember going to bed. So we didn't go to bed on the best of terms. I know I woke up, however, at 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, couldn't tell you exactly when. I woke up scared to death. And my only description for this for you is that I felt like a rat in a corner with no way out. See, one of the things that's true here is that I really loved that son of mine. Still do, but I loved that son at that time. I loved that son enough at that time to know that things had to change. And I'd known I had a problem with drinking long before this point. I just hadn't been willing to do anything about it. I'm like most folks, when you talk to someone about stopping drinking, talk to the active alcoholic about not drinking, it's like, forever? Really? They might say, do you think that's a little bit extreme? Forever. And that's the only thing I could do is think in those terms. And it's one of the reasons why it's really important to have meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because we're going to tell you that you don't have to think about forever. And I hadn't heard that at that point in time. I'm just scared to death. And I know I can't keep going in the direction I am. And I said a little prayer in the bed. I couldn't tell you exactly what it was. And I was sort of kind of to the extent, God, please help me. That's what I know is true. God, please help me. I can't do this. I don't know how to do this. Now, what I know happened here, there weren't any burning bushes, no bright lights, no bolts of lightning, no voices, no nothing, except I got a very calm feeling and I fell back asleep. And I woke up the next day, and I've not had a drink of alcohol since that day. Now, I don't know how that happens. I'm not here to try to explain that. This isn't we're not taking a college course where we're doing deep analysis. I don't really care how it happened. All I know is it did happen, and I got up the next day, and I didn't want to drink, and I didn't drink. And I did that for 2 or 3 days. And then we went back and saw my son. And the next Friday, I went to a meeting. So it's 2 weeks now. I went to my first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. And I went on my own. I went to get him, my son, a meeting book. God is strange as he is, right? So I'm walking, and by this time, I've already started to have the great debate in my head. Am I an alcoholic or am I not an alcoholic? Maybe some of you have had that. You know, I really wasn't quite sure. I can only tell you that I don't have a good definitive answer to that other than the fact that I fit all the description of alcoholic, and I stopped asking the question after a period of time. I don't care anymore. I'm an alcoholic. I can't drink. I don't believe I can drink any more today than I could yesterday. And so that's all. At some point in time, it was just not a point of intellectual discourse anymore. So I went to this first meeting, and I remember this meeting for a couple of things, and it's really important in terms of my understanding of Alcoholics Anonymous and how we conduct ourselves. I went to the meeting, and there were two greeters at the door, and they said, "Hi, we're glad you're here." They didn't ask me my SAT scores. They didn't ask me what I did for a living. They didn't ask me, they didn't ask me any of those things. So none of that stuff. They said, "We're glad you're here. It's coffee pot inside." I went inside and I met a gentleman by the name of Mitch. And Mitch, I have no idea if Mitch is still coming around or not. It's been years since I've seen him. I hope he is. But Mitch took the time to welcome me. He said, "Coffee over there, literature here, the meeting will start in a little bit." It made me feel okay. And I stuck my hand up when they asked if there was anybody new or coming back. And I said, "I'm Dana. I'm an alcoholic." I don't know that I believed it at that point in time, but I took that action. See, one of the things we're gonna talk about is we talk about this disease of alcoholism. This is a program of action. I always say this to the guys I sponsor. That chapter doesn't say into thinking, right? It says into action. Now, what action are you taking here? So I went to that meeting, and I remember the speaker speaking, and what he had to say has no bearing to my story whatsoever. Wives lost, vehicles wrecked, jobs lost, I mean, all the stuff that I can't, but you know what? It didn't matter. I was okay. I felt comfortable. I don't know why that is. I don't know why that is. I hadn't heard anybody say, identify, don't compare. I hadn't heard any of that. I just was okay. So I started going to a Friday night meeting where I was going to an Al-Anon meeting at the end of the hall, and I'm going to an AA meeting. And we're going to get to recovery right quick here. Because there's a bearded gentleman. I met him at the very first meeting. Big, tall guy. His name is Frank Weston. And a big, bearded, imposing gentleman. But he seemed to have something. And I'd heard somewhere that you needed to get a sponsor. So if no one's told you that, if you're new and coming around, one of the things I'll tell you is this thing will work a whole lot better if you get yourself a sponsor. And if it's a really scary, imposing guy or woman, so much the better. So much the better. So I'm going to ask this guy to be my sponsor, right? Now, this is kind of like asking a girl on a date. And guys will probably relate to this. I went on a double date with my best friend when I was a kid. I'm counting light posts before I'm going to lean to my left and kiss my date in the back of the Saab that we're driving. I'm trying to build up my courage to do that. Well, I'm thinking, I got to ask, what happens if he says no? Well, you'll learn pretty quickly in Alcoholics Anonymous, we're taught not to say no. So I asked this guy, he's imposing, and he said, I'd be happy to be your sponsor. Why don't we get together on Sunday night before the Sunday night meeting, we'll talk about that. Now, there are no rules in AA. We read that tonight. Somebody read the preamble. I think Andrew read the preamble. And there are no rules in AA. You're going to remember if you say you are. But if I'm going to say that I'm sponsored by Frank Weston, there's certain things I need to do. The first thing he told me is, and I've always kind of thought this was humorous, but it's really true. He said, "This thing works better if you don't drink." Okay. I wasn't drinking. I didn't want to drink. Okay, I get by that. We're good. We're good. The next thing he said is, "I want you to call me." This was about many years ago. He said, "I want you to call me on Monday night between 8 and 9:30. He didn't ask me if it was convenient. He didn't ask me if I was available. He just said, "I want you to call me." And he emphasized to me, "You don't even need to know what you're going to say. Just call me." I can't tell you how many guys that I sponsor today that I say, "Just pick up the phone and call somebody." while you're pressing the number, God will come. Just take action, not of your own making. He wanted to see, and I do this with the guys I sponsor, he wanted to see if I was willing to take direction. Because if I'm not willing to take direction, I'm sponsoring myself, and my experience has been, I can't help you. If you're sponsoring you, you're beyond my assistance. He said, we're going to work the steps as they're outlined in the big books. We're going to start at the beginning. We're going to go to page 164. And when we get to 164, you're going to turn around and find somebody else to go through. He said that you and I are going to be in a meeting once a week where we both share. It was a subtle way of suggesting that I get a home group, and I joined his home group, and I never left that. Whatever home group he was in was the home group that I was in. And then he said, when you're at a podium with Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going to wear a coat and tie. So I'm wearing this coat and tie tonight, not because I'm better than anybody that's here. I'm doing it because he asked me to do that. And he asked me to do that for one very simple reason. He said, we need to be the best example of Alcoholics Anonymous we can be. And so whenever I go to a podium, I wear a jacket and tie. Always. And Frank has since passed, and that's a sad, unfortunate occurrence. But I learned that from Frank. I had a great sponsor when I started. Frank showed me what to do. He didn't tell me what to do. I was talking to my daughter-in-law about, dealing with teenagers. I said, share, don't tell. You think about what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. We share. We share our experience. And you either find that attractive or you don't. If you do, you fall. Monkey see, monkey do, right? If you do what I did, you're going to get what I got. It's that simple. And that's what Frank started to do. He knew I was a college-educated guy, so he gave me an assignment, told me to go read sections of the big book, and then I'd come sit down with him, and he asked me what I read. He wanted to make sure I was reading the black parts. This is not interpretive literature. I'm an English major, even though I teach business today, but I'm an English major. This is not interpretive literature, right? If it says write, we write. If it says pray, we pray. You just do what's there. It's a basic text. Follow the steps, you get the result. But for a college-educated guy like me coming in here, I read this before I got to. I read a good piece of the big book as if I was reading a book. It made no sense whatsoever. When I read the big book with the direction of a sponsor, it made enormous sense. All of a sudden, I'm identifying. I can see tons of things in Bill that I can identify with, even though Bill's story is far wilder than anything I could tell. Right? I can identify with that. And that's what I would say to all of us tonight. It says in the book, recovery begins with one alcoholic sharing experience, strength, and hope with another. What does that mean? What that means is that when I sit with somebody and share my story, and they can identify with that, we now have a foundation that I can't have with any normal person. A person that's not an alcoholic doesn't understand how I think, what I feel, they just don't. I don't blame them. I don't fault them. It doesn't make them good, bad, or indifferent. It means that when I'm with you folks, I can tell you things I'd never tell somebody else. Ever. And I found that that's enormously empowering in ways that I can't even begin to describe. So I started doing the work. I didn't have any problem with the first part of the first step. I will tell you that I still have to learn about the second part of the first step. First step has two parts, and there's no and in there, by the way. There's no and in that stuff. It says, I had no control over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. I love the way Chuck Chamberlain says, if you haven't listened to Chuck Chamberlain's A New Pair of Glasses, I highly recommend you get a copy of it. It's probably been one of the most powerful pieces of AA media that I have read and listened to. You can do both. But he talks about the fact that my life is unmanageable by me. And I can't tell you how many times I have a sponsee on the other end of the phone and we're talking. I just have to remind them, wait a minute, your life is unmanageable by you. And when I'm saying that to them, I'm reminding myself. What I love about sponsorship, and sponsorship's a big part of my life, it's a big part of my AA. When I'm listening to another guy and sharing my experience, strength, and hope with them, normally what happens is in the middle of that, I say, wait a minute, I'm not doing that either. Or, wait a minute, that little problem I had this morning, it's the same thing. I think I get more from sponsorship than the sponsee gets. I honestly believe that. I believe that's why it tells us that if we want to keep this, we have to give it away. So we did the first two steps were pretty easy. I didn't have any problem. I'd been a regular member of my church. That's a whole different story now that I'm not in a religious mindset anymore. I'm in a spiritual mindset. But at the time, I didn't have any debate with God. I didn't have any debate about the second step whatsoever. The third step, I didn't know what I was getting into for this. We're in this stone church there in Netcong, Stanhope, New Jersey. I'm sorry. And we're meeting before the meeting on a Sunday night. And Frank says, we're at the point to get the third step prayer, right? So he gets down on his knees, says, get down here with me, puts his arm around me, and we're saying the third step prayer. Not sure I signed up for that, right? That's great. Nothing happened. Then he immediately got me up and said, okay, now you're going to go. And I was just about to go on vacation. He said, it's time to do some writing. So he walked me through the fourth step. Fourth and fifth steps, I was just thinking about this morning. The fourth and fifth steps are two of the most powerful steps for me in Alcoholics Anonymous, because it's where I got free of some stuff that I needed to get free of. And I always tell this. So I went off on vacation and I sat down and I did. And a lot of my harms relative to my family, my work circumstances. I was in a therapy for a year before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't get along with coworkers. A couple of months after I'm in AA, I'm not going to the therapist anymore. I'm improving the relations with my coworkers by the work that I'm doing in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's not to disparage anything whatsoever. That's not a commentary one way or the other about therapy or any of that. It's just for me, you know, I didn't know what problem I had. I was trying to treat alcoholism with therapy, and my experience has been that doesn't work particularly well. That's just for me. So I go off and I do this, the fourth step to the best of my ability. I sat down and we did a fifth step. And the way he did the fifth step was he told me a little bit about his experience. And he had some stuff in his back. And I had stuff, had everything I needed to have, at least at that point in time, on my fourth step list. It wasn't like I didn't have stuff that I needed to talk about. But he shared with me something about his experience. And all of a sudden, whatever barriers I had about sharing any of this with him disappeared. And I found that when I do that with the guys that I sponsor, it just breaks the ice. Now all of a sudden, we don't have any difficulties. Now there was one thing that was in that I still remember that night. It was a very powerful night. We got done. We did the fifth, and we immediately did the sixth and seventh. That's the way my sponsor did it. I didn't take an hour. Immediately got down and said, you know, you want to get rid of this stuff? Yes. Let's do the seven step prayer. Boom. Now, I've had to come back to 6 and 7 significantly in later years of recovery. I spent a lot of time in 6 and 7 now. But for them, that was fine. But there was one thing that I shared with him that he didn't have any experience with. There's one of the things that's true, and I say this with the guys that I sponsor. If you come to me with something I don't have any experience with, I'm going to ask your permission, and I'll take it to my sponsor. And if he doesn't have any experience with it, he'll take it to his sponsor. Now, I can tell you that the chain of sponsorship that I'm in goes all the way to Clancy I. Some of you may know who Clancy is. So it's a fairly long, somebody in there is going to have experience. For the new alcoholic, what that says is we're not going to give you advice. If we do our job right, we're not giving anybody any advice. This is not an advice service. It's got to be based upon experience. And if you hear anything come out of my mouth that's not based upon my experience, then you should run, don't walk away from me. Right? It's got to be based upon my experience. And he didn't have any experience, but it just so happens that my sponsor, who happens to be my current sponsor, sponsors one woman. And this woman had very similar experience to the experience that I had. And he asked if she would be willing to spend some time with me. And I got a chance to spend 1 hour one-on-one with a person that had some similar experiences to the experiences that I had. I can't tell you how freeing that was. All of a sudden, I wasn't alone. It was stuff that most people can't relate to. I found in the rooms there are a lot of people that can, but before that I didn't know that. I thought I was just all by myself. And I've had to come to learn this very powerful set of terms that I use. That was then, this is now. I need to not live back there, I need to live right here. And Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me how to do that. We went on and did the, you know, eighth and ninth step, and I do the tenth step. I do a little reflection in the morning, not at the end of the day. I know that's probably backwards to what the book says, but I do my reflection in the morning. I do a little reading. I do a little reflection to kind of figure out where my head is before I do my prayer. Because I need to know what I need to say to God in the morning. Some days I kind of stay spiritual for maybe an hour or two. Some days it's 15 minutes. But I have that regular practice. I wouldn't not do that. I travel a lot. I always take my books or copies of the stuff with me so I can do that. I do it every day. It's very important to me. I sponsor guys. I have a commitment in my home group. And that's incredibly important to me. Being connected to Alcoholics Anonymous. When I'm talking to a guy that's got trouble, 9 times out of 10, the answer to him is, go do AA. Now, you may be sitting up there saying, well, I'm going to meetings, right? Meetings are a part of it, but that's not doing AA. Doing AA means carrying a message of experience, strength, and hope to somebody else. It means calling, as I tell my guys, when you call somebody, you ask how they're doing. Don't spend any time telling them how you're doing. Find out how they're doing. Because when you do that, you leave room for God to come in and fix whatever it is that's not working well for you. So this relationship that I had with my father that was really, really frayed. And one could argue that there might have been some justification for that. But it didn't matter. I got sober in April. November comes around, it's time to go home. I'm living in New Jersey. We're going to drive up to Maine. We're going home for Thanksgiving. Scary, right? I don't know about you guys, but the people that know how to press my buttons are the people that are closest to me. Family, they don't remember me as my sisters and brother now. They remember me as I was, not as I am today. They don't know me as I am today. They only know that which I get a chance to share with them. So I'm going back to Maine, and I'm scared, right? It's like I remember, you know, and I've done all this. I got some amends to make. I talked about the behavior, the fear. Fear is the corroding fabric of that was driving me. Fear from the very beginning, way back when I was a kid. It's just fear, self-centered fear. So here's what he told me to do. He said, "Go and be of service. Stop thinking about all this other stuff. Go and be of service." Now I did that. I did that every time I was with my parents. Sometimes I had to bite my tongue. Sometimes I had to go take a long walk. But I just went my bit of service. I tried to put, you know, I tried to be the best son I could be. But I hadn't been. I hadn't been a good son. I could tell you all kinds of ways in which I hadn't been a good son. I hadn't been a good brother. That I still got to work on. What happened is over 10 years period of time, all of a sudden I realized, wait a minute, I don't hate this guy anymore. In fact, I loved him. I loved him. There's stuff that he did that, you know, I haven't forgotten that happened, but it's no longer of consequence to me. And you know, in later years of his life, and it was really sad. He was a very good English professor, a very good Shakespearean scholar, and he couldn't get sentences out. My heart would break. He'd start to speak, and he couldn't find words. You know, that happens to me now. So, not as badly as it was happening to him, but it's old age. It's not as, you know, that's what's happening. But there was a point in time when my sisters and brother were writing his case about something, and I recall saying, no, stop. He's doing the best he can. And here's a guy that hated him. I did. I hated him. And I didn't do that. All I did was go and be of service. All I did was go and be of service. It says in the chat, I don't know if it's still called this in this edition of the big book. It used to be Freedom from Bondage, I think, in the third edition. It's towards the chapter in the end of the book. And it talks about, you know, what do we do? We have a real issue with someone. We pray for them for 2 weeks, you know, for the whole happiness and strength. Now, I have fellow pigeons who have real experience where that's true. And their life is ex-wives if they absolutely don't want to kill them, you know, and it doesn't happen anymore. I just believe that that's the foundation of what we do. We start to act differently. We start to act in a principled way. I talk about this all the time with the guys that I sponsor. You know, is that principled behavior? Is that principled behavior? Because we're principled people. We're not different than anybody else. We're just principled. There are things that we do. You know, we leave the place cleaner than when we found it. I mean, little things that we do. Those are the things that, and what that does is that changes us. That gets inside and it moves things around, and we become completely different than we were when we came here. The power of Alcoholics Anonymous is amazing. I've gotten to do some amazing things in life that never would have happened, the doors that never would have been opened, because I wouldn't have been willing to open them before I got sober. I can't even begin to recount those to you. And not everything's, I mean, listen, not everything has gone swimming. Trust me, it has not by any stretch of the imagination. And I'm sure there will be bumps in the road ahead. You know, one of the things we talk about is living life on life's terms. What that means is recognizing that, you know, the good news is I get to get up today and I get to live. And that means I've got to confront life as it presents itself to me. And I have to trust that it's going to be okay with God. You know, it says in the book, job or no job, wife or no wife, we simply can't get sober until we put our dependence upon God. That's the hardest thing in the world for an ego-centered individual like me to do. To trust that God will take care of me under any and all circumstances. I shouldn't be here. I shouldn't be here by all rights. The things that I've done in life don't warrant me. I haven't earned anything here. The only thing I do is get up, and we talk about this all the time, consistent action. Consistent action in Alcoholics Anonymous has enabled me to put together today. I gave you my sober date. Forget the sober date. It doesn't mean anything. I would say to anybody that's here, you've probably got some folks here that are relatively new. The only thing I've got is one day of sobriety. That's all any of us have got. That, the good news is that's the greatest gift I've ever been given. I didn't drink today. I didn't want to drink today. I don't need to drink today. And chances are pretty good if I do the same things tonight and tomorrow, I won't drink tomorrow. And that I learned in Alcoholics Anonymous and no place else. Thanks for letting me share.